Monroe Today, a weekly public affairs program focusing on what's happening in our county. Here's this week's contributor, Gilda Stanberry, Executive Director and CEO of the Forsyth Convention and Visitors Bureau.
So welcome back to Monroe Today. I'm Gilda Stanberry, your host, and I am delighted to tell you that we have a part two to our interview with Percy Freeman. And we started off with his book, Time Passages, which all began when Mr. Freeman was looking for his family roots. So while you were away, we were still chatting about the connections. So you found the people that you think were from your father's side.
Yes.
And we were talking about the DNA, how that testing has changed.
Yes. Now it allows you to find your lineages, and specifically I'm talking about African Ancestry Incorporated, which focuses on tracing your roots specifically to different ethnic groups or tribes in Africa. That has improved to the point where they can tell you the lineage of the males and female from all males and females, basically. Before it was just a male that could only trace his mother and his father's lineage. Now they can use the DNA from the females to trace both sides, I think.
And that's all the technology. I mean, some of that has gotten sensationalized with cold cases.
Yes. Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Which I think is pretty extraordinary.
Very extraordinary, because if you're in a DNA database now, and if you're a suspect in a particular case, they can go to a DNA database and find someone that is matching you.
And then start
and
walking
start from
it.
There.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's very helpful in criminal investigations, yes. No doubt about it.
And this may be a little, pinging around a bit, but law enforcement's in your blood.
Yes, I have two uncles who were in law enforcement, and my cousin, the judge in Bakersfield, California, his father, who was the deputy chief at Los Angeles County Sheriff's Office. I have another cousin who's a sheriff currently in Georgia. I won't mention where, but he's a current sheriff in Georgia.
But now, when I saw in your book,
And also, I have another cousin who works at the Department of Corrections.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the family business. I've noticed that, though. When you look back at family histories, you'll see people that share the same professions, same interests, same aptitude for certain things. But when you were in the military and all, yes?
No, well, it's in the military. I worked on missile systems and bombs.
Okay. Were you a private investigator?
That was
stuff?
When I left the military, and I was attending college, and I needed a little extra money. So.
Okay. Well, I knew that you had run a parallel in there.
Yeah. So after I left active duty military, I was still a member of the Georgia Air National Guard, where I served for 27 years. But I attended college in Atlanta, at Atlanta Junior College. And so I got next door, and I got my private investigator's license to make a little extra money, because I was under the GI Bill, and a little extra money helps.
So, well, I just got this visual, the kid, I read, and I hope I have it right in my head, that your grandparents' home is where the firehouse is in Juliet?
Or close? Not exactly, but I'll explain that.
Okay.
So when our house burned, which is, where the Dollar General is in Juliet?
Oh, yeah.
The house where my mother was burned was on top of the hill there.
Okay.
On Old Juliet Road. After that house burned, we moved eventually downtown Juliet, where the fire station is now. I was probably around 5 years old at that point. And then from there, we moved north on McCracken Street and stayed there until I was around 13.
Well, so when you were talking about the Air Force and all, I just keep putting you back there in that, you know, a little place, a little mill house over.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the row houses we call
right.
it.
Right. So you are very generous in helping people find their roots.
Yes.
You put together this PowerPoint that you started off with. I know you've done presentations all over. But how would you encourage, as connected as we are, we really don't know where we come from, as what I'm finding with the younger generations. So how would you encourage people to get started?
Well, when I put together the PowerPoint presentation, I wanted them to know the resources where they could get information to help. And one of the biggest resources now, which didn't exist when I first started, I spent many Saturday mornings at the library, the state archives, and federal archives, looking through microfiche.
Right.
Old newspapers. So things have changed now because Ancestry collects so much information. And you can find information on Ancestry that you don't even know exists, but they have it. Like, for instance, my grandmother's father served in World War I. And as a child, you know, we went to his house and we saw him. He may have a drink or something. He'd walk around like he's in the Army marching. And so we laughed about it. But
right.
Then later on, I found out while he was serving in the military, he was kicked on the head by a mule. And so he had a silver dollar in his skull. And I remember that as a kid because he used to have to treat it all the time. And so later on, Ancestry provided a document where he served in the United States Army in 1918 at Camp A.A. Humphreys, Virginia, which is now Fort Belvoir.
Fascinating.
And so he did serve in the Army. He got out on a medical discharge, but he served in the Army for 4 months. So the interesting part about that, it confirmed that he did serve in the Army. So when we were laughing, we didn't really know because, you know, we were young kids. But so when I found his honorable discharge paper, I completed the application for the VA for
right.
headstone. And they shipped the headstone to me free of charge, and I put it on his grave down in Juliet. It's the exact replica, the exact same type of headstone as the ones at Arlington.
Nice.
Yes.
So where is he? He's in a family plot in Juliet, or
yeah,
one of
St. Paul AME Church.
Okay.
Is where his headstone, where he's buried. As most of my family is buried there.
I was going to say, is that where your people are?
Yeah. Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah. That was very important. My father was Army, Air Corps. He was in battle, you know, whatever the terminology is, in Army, Air Corps. And, it was very important to him that those things were included on his marker, his service and stuff.
Well, you know, I mentioned to you earlier that I had something interesting to tell you, but I haven't told you yet.
Well, come on.
So here it is. So Joseph Ledbetter, his father, John, served in the Confederacy.
Okay.
Which makes me eligible for the Sons of the Confederacy.
Okay. Well, so, most of us with Southern roots have somebody on one side and the other.
Just as an interesting note there. So the other thing is, when I attended the Ledbetter reunion in Alabama in 2010, that same relative who brought me the family lineages told me about another book called The Ledbetters of Virginia. And she said, Percy, do you know Nathan Bedford Forrest? I said, yes, I know exactly who he is.
Right.
Because as I indicated earlier, I studied Civil War history.
Right.
So I said, yeah, he was a city alderman in Memphis, Tennessee. He owned a plantation in DeSoto, Mississippi. He was a two-star cavalry general that led the charge on Fort Pillow, Tennessee in 1863, where they massacred United States colored troops after they surrendered. And he was the first Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan. And she said, well, Percy, you know, you can choose your friends, but you can't choose your relatives. I say, excuse me, what are you talking about? You know, what are you talking about? She said, yeah, he's your distant cousin. I said, well, how do you know? She says, well, if you go to the Ledbetter's of Virginia book, Nathan Bedford's Forrest's great-great-grandmother or great-great-grandmother was named Jane Ledbetter.
Okay.
So, there you go.
They were a product of their time. I'd like to think some of that would be different now. But
no, I'd like to think so too, but it's that unknown history.
That's
that
fascinating.
One would never know if you didn't have that, do the research.
Right, the connections.
And once you find the information, it's like, what do you do with it? Well, for me, it's just the truth, so it doesn't bother me. It is what it is. I can't control what happened or how people think. I can only control me. And so it's part of the history, and I think it's kind of fascinating history, really, to me, because a lot of people just don't know what their roots are. And I know, and I want my kids to know, and I want future generations to know.
We are more alike than we are different.
That is correct.
I have heard that many, many times over.
Exactly. And so back to what I was telling you before, though, in terms of finding your roots.
Yes.
What I would do is I'd do the PowerPoint presentation and present information and sources, resources for the participants to find their roots. There's obituaries, old family Bibles, interview your oldest living relatives, courthouse documents. And as I say, now Ancestry has a lot more information available because when you join Ancestry, you click on the green leaf and information pops up that you probably would not find ordinarily.
It used to be the Church of the Latter-day Saints. You used to have to go to their archives. You used to have to physically go to their archives.
I took that trip.
Get permission and all, which was fascinating. Huge reservoirs of information.
Yeah.
But now with Ancestry, it even includes photographs.
Yes, yes.
Which just helps you connect.
Yes, definitely. There's so much information out there and so much information available. One of the biggest problems that I have is Ancestry, because other people have their family trees on there,
mm-hmm.
and you may match some people in their tree. And if you start connecting without verifying, you end up with more people in your tree and you haven't verified the information. Sometimes you end up with duplicate names and you have to go back through and remove those and edit.
Well, and it's also, it's not always well-researched information being added.
Exactly.
Because people can add.
Right.
And if they haven't done their homework, but right. I also remember from genealogy, because I too am D-A-R, C-A-R, S-A-R, all those, that family names would be reused. John,
right.
And then John dies, and, you know,
yes.
Three or four kids down, there's another John, you
yeah.
know.
And a lot of times the census records, they would misspell names. They would write them as what they think they heard. So a lot of times you're going to find a lot of misspelled names and you have to continue searching and compare the records because sometimes it's the same person. Like, for instance, in Juliet, there's a family named Toles, T-O-L-E-S.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they actually came from Jones County, T-O-W-L-E-S.
Oh, so then you were relying upon the literacy and or the accuracy of the person recording the information.
Exactly. And I've seen the name Freeman spelled F-R-E-M-O-N in a census record, but I knew it was the same relative because of the children. So it just took me a lot longer to find it.
That's my Newman family. There are three ways to spell it.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, there's a lot of misspelled names. But one thing that really helped me was I had a relative who remembered a lot of the maiden names, because in earlier census records, they list the head of household and then they list the wife's name, but they didn't have a maiden name. So a lot of times you would have to find out what the maiden name is to find out the lineage of that wife.
But, you know, in our lifetime, you can look at newspaper accounts of gatherings or whatever, and it's Mrs. John whatever.
Right.
You don't have her first name. You don't have her middle name.
Even in Mary Person's high school yearbooks, they would list some of the teacher's husband's name instead of their name.
Right.
Which was ridiculous, but that's what they did. So
it just makes it harder to work backwards on that and figure it out. Well, tell me some of your favorite stories or some of the favorite things you have for retelling or you asked about or you're asked about from your book.
Well, I guess the most people ask about the family history.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was a police officer, and I also worked as an investigator for the district attorney and Federal Aviation Administration. So there were a lot of experiences, cases that I worked, but most people don't know about that. So they ask me about the family history stuff and life in Juliet. One thing that's mentioned in there, and I don't know if you read that, but one of the funny things is like the Bowden restaurant that closed in 1969, Marvin Bowden's restaurant.
Okay, that predates me.
Yes,
being here. But.
Yes. So in 1969, I was working there at age 12 and 13, bagging groceries, pumping gas, and all that. At the time, the restaurant was segregated. Blacks
right.
could not eat in the diner. There was a storage room in the back of the restaurant where blacks ate. So that summer, I went to Miami. You know, before school starts, I took a trip down to Miami to live with a relative.
Okay.
I was 13 years old, traveling along on a Greyhound bus.
Okay.
So I stayed in Miami during the summer there. There was a riot going on in Miami at the time, so I saw that. But on the way back home, I caught the bus, and I had to change buses in Jacksonville, Florida, a Greyhound bus. When I got ready to board the second bus for the last leg home, I couldn't find my ticket. However, I did have a small 45 AM FM radio record player that was brand new in a box. So when I got ready to get on the bus, the bus driver said, no ticket, no ride. So there were no cell phones back then.
Right.
So here I am, 13 years old. What do I do? I can't call home. What do I do? I said, well, maybe I can sell this little record player. So I walked around trying to sell it to somebody. And then one guy said, oh, why don't you go down there to the pawn shop? So, okay. So I went down to the pawn shop and I told the guy, I said, look, I need to get some money for a bus ticket home. He said, well, let me see what you got. So I pulled it out of the box and there was my ticket in the box. I said, no, thanks. I'll see you later. Went back to the bus station and got to caught the next bus home.
Lucky you. But how unusual. Now, I remember segregation. I remember all that in my own lifetime. How unusual was it for a 13-year-old to be traveling halfway across the country on a Greyhound bus?
Well, I don't know, but I did it. From Juliet, the bus actually stopped in Juliet on Highway 87.
Okay.
So I caught the bus, and of course, we had several stops along the way, but I stayed on the bus all the way to Jacksonville was the changing point. And then I took that bus from Jacksonville all the way to Miami, and the same thing on the way back. You know, it was just riding the Greyhound bus.
I don't see buses on interstate like that.
13-year-olds don't do that now.
No.
No parent would even allow that.
No.
But I guess they felt comfortable allowing me to do it because I was me. If it had been one of the other kids, they may not...
The world was a lot different when we were 13.
Yeah.
you know, just in terms of just mobility and security.
Yeah. So one funny story, though, is that Marvin Bowden had two alligators in his pond, which was between the store and his house.
Which we can still see the pond,
yes,
right?
Correct.
Okay.
So what happened is some guys from Florida stopped at the store, and they brought back two small alligators, and they asked him if he wanted them. He said, yeah, so he put them in the pond. So one alligator, they both grew up, you know, to be about 5 feet long or something, 5 to 6 feet long. One alligator died during the winter, and the other one survived. And he named the alligator Joe. So at one point, the dog, Marvin's dog, was eaten by the gator, so he decided to get rid of the gator. And some guys wanted to take it from him, and the game warden heard about it and said, no, you can't give away the alligator. So Marvin said, well, you come down and catch it then. So they tried to catch the alligator, put the trap out there, and never could catch it. So they went to Marvin. Marvin said, hey, I'll tell you how to catch old Joe. He said, I fed Joe at the same spot all the time, and if you put your cage there, you can catch it. So they put chicken in the cage, and that's
sure
how
enough.
They caught Joe and gave Joe a ticket out of town.
I love local legends. I love this local story. Okay, we have, well, we're almost at the end. So, again, your book is Time Passages. It focuses on your life. I think there was a sentence at the end of your introduction where you say, it's his story, a reminder that a positive outlook can help overcome even the most daunting obstacles. And I think that's a message we all need to kind of carry forward.
Well, you know, if you experience some of the things that I did growing up, a lot of people say, well, Percy, you've done well. I said, well, I just wanted to live. And even though I was dealt different cards, you know, I
it was a rough beginning for sure.
Yeah, I just felt there was more than what life had to offer me there in Juliet. So that's why I ended up leaving and changing my life.
Well, I very much appreciate your sharing that with us, and I appreciate your generosity in helping others find their stories and their roots. Again, it's called Time Passages. It's available on Amazon.
Yes.
And I'm Gilda Stanberry, your host. We've had Percy Freeman with us, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
A special thanks to each of our contributors and their guests. Monroe Today is a weekly public affairs presentation of WQMJ. Join us next week, Sunday at 7 a.m. for Monroe Today on Magic 100.